Accession number 27180, Reel 2.
Bill Hales, Reel 2. So, what other preparations were there for D-Day? You'd done lots and lots of training and you'd done schemes and so on.
Yeah, you just carried on training and everything, you know. But we were sent out in the country and with your Dixie and your water, you had a water bottle full of water. We were given two potatoes, each man was given two potatoes and a tin of corned beef between three. And sort of different, everybody lived like harvest tourism or something like that. And you were sent out and you were, each three or four had to make a fire, you know, bit of twigs. We fellas had never done it before. And when we got a bit of a flame, we put a Dixie on there, and then these, we call them Swedes, country fellas, you know. And, no, you don't do it like that. You wait, the fire goes down to the hot ashes, and, you know, after that, because your Dixie was black with soot, but on the hot ashes it's all right, you see, but you had to listen to them. And when we were in Holland, and it was one of the worst winters we ever had, some of the men were going to shoot themselves, it was that cold. And they were all really cold. I was crying myself, and, you know, it was right out in the open. And this country lad looked across, and there's all these little haystacks ready to pitchfork onto the wagons. He says, go over there, he says, and get one of them. We all laughed at him, said, rubbish. Anyway, somebody went over and he said, hey, he's right. He says, a lovely moment, yeah. So the 300 of us, two or 300 of us all got on his haystacks, and the next, about 10 minutes after the whistle's blown and all that, and somebody says, see what he wants, the sergeant. And he looked up, what's the matter? Oh, my God, he said, I thought you all run off and left me. Anyway, he come and joined us. He said, anyway, after that 10 minutes warm, everybody was cheerful and they got over it, you know. But there was a nasty accident in farther up where the ruts and the roads.
This is in Holland.
Yeah, in the ruts and the roads. These men got in there because you already had one blanket that was you sleep with and you got buried in that blanket, you know. There was 20 men lying in the ruts with the blankets over, and around the corner come tanks and they went right over the whole lot of them, killed a lot. And of course, men must have broke up and cried, you know.
I think I've heard someone else tell me that story.
Mm.
A gentleman down in Wales, I can't remember his name.
Yeah. But we caught 10 German prisoners, and we were corned beef and hard biscuits and dried potatoes, dried carrots and all that. And it was only 10, so they're allowed to stand and have dinner with us. And somebody says, you know, he said, oh, bloody hell, he said in perfect English, this is rubbish, you'll kill yourself at eating this. And he turned out to be a head chef at London Hotel before the war. He was ended up cooking for us. And he made some lovely food.
Yeah.
And up comes the truck. This is fella shouting, we've got 10 prisoners here. And everybody says, no, it's one, 9. Oh, you got 10. I got to dig them up. I got to take them home with us. Take back the camp. Anyway, they took them back, and the officers ended up with them in the other camp. But he's a lovely cook.
Yeah, wonderful. Back to Folkestone then. So, were you at Folkestone right up to D-Day, or did you?
No, I went to Southampton.
Southampton, right. And we were talking about the preparations for D-Day. Were you given French money and things like that?
We had money printed in England, but was valued in their country, you know. And we had so much, I can't remember, but you just, maybe there was nothing there to buy, you know.
But so were you in a closed area just before D-Day?
Yeah, tents and the guards all the way around, you couldn't get out.
Yeah. You knew something big was going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you have any idea where you'd be going? No,
yeah, nothing. Just, you know, didn't even know where you were going, and they told you nothing. They just showed you how to bandage up, and if anybody got hurt, what to do, you know, put your hand over it's another bad wound, stop the blood, and use these needles and powder and stuff. You got to feel dressing in your pocket there, you know, so you can stop the blood, anything like that.
It's not very encouraging, is it?
No.
Were you all getting a bit wary now?
I had a needle with morphine in it, I don't know why. And he showed me how to use it, and anybody better stick it in their arm or anything like that, you know. But I never use it. I give it to the chap and said, you use it.
So, how long before you went did you know you actually know you were going?
Oh, you knew then, because the ships went out and turned back, and, you know, there was storm come up, and the fellas were seasick, and the first lot was really in a bad way.
Right. So you weren't in the first lot?
No, I went the third.
So when did you get on board a ship? Did you get on board in Southampton?
Yeah.
Do you know what ship you went on?
No, it's just a number on there.
Landing craft, was it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what time did you get on board ship? This was D-Day plus...
I think it was about 11:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. And had you heard anything about how the invasion was going?
No, they kept everything quiet, they kept music going and all that, and all that sort of thing, and they give you extra this and extra that, you know, and had these ATS girls going around and talking, and civilians, you know, talking and things like that.
Did they tell you how the invasion was going?
No, they didn't say nothing.
News at all?
No.
Right, yeah. So you got on your landing craft and you set off. And what did you see as you went across?
I see a lot of lads being ill. They wasn't used to the boat, you see, because I've been on a ship before, like, so, you know. But they looked at you and then they started going green. And what had them gone is this sailor come by and he had a piece of fatty bacon. He just walked by and these lads looked at them all and said, "Oh." Yeah, they had a bit of fun. But they didn't know what was going to hit them, mind you.
So how long did it take you to get across?
Well, I got about 4 or 5 hours. A long time, I don't know when, because nobody had a watch, you know. When we got there, we were pretty hungry.
So what could you see as you came in towards the French?
A lot of smoke and all that, you know, and a lot of clattering and banging going on, and there's hell of a lot of mess, you know. You couldn't believe it, you know, you see all the junk there and you don't know how you're going to get on, but they got managed.
So your landing crafts came into the shore, did it get in fairly close?
It got very close, you know, because it wasn't too bad. Sword Beach.
And you jumped off into the water, didn't you?
Yeah, it was about knee deep, we were lucky.
And who was your NCO then, do you remember who was in charge?
Yeah, he's a Taylor, I think, this corporal named Taylor.
Uh-huh.
And the other Lance Corporal, I'll call him Scotty. I never knew what his name was, Scotty.
And they had you organised on the beach, did they?
He just screaming and shouting, "Run, run, come on, bloody run," he says. "Have your head blown off," and they all run with their backside up and their head down.
And you ran across the beach?
Yeah.
And where were you heading for?
So to a sand dome, you know, get your head down there. But this captain coming on up, he says, "Don't stand there, you bloody fool, get moving." He says, "I know where you are, get moving." So we just run over to, you know, a load of wreck and all that we got behind there.
Buildings
and old trucks and things like that, you know, tanks, anything.
Do you know where the Germans were?
We could see them, you know. But after a time, the officers and all that had to have the pips, the sergeant on the sleeve. And they said, "Whatever you do, do not salute anybody, because I know it's an officer and he'll cop it." And one fella, he was court-martialed, he went up and saluted this I don't know if he was an officer or an NCO, and of course, no time at all, he was killed. Mm. And this fellow was put under arrest and sent back to England.
Do you think that was deliberate?
Deliberate, yeah.
You were a Bolshie lot in the East Lancs, were you?
Oh, there's. I went over there with, it wasn't the East Lancs that went over there, we went, took this fella's place, you see.
Oh, right.
And another regiment.
Which regiment were you with then?
It was, went over with the Royal Engineers.
Oh, right, right. Do you know which bit of the Royal Engineers it was?
It was a 505, I think.
So these are all new people to
from
you,
the Northern Division.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. So these are all new people for you?
Yeah. Yeah. But you see, I knew something about explosives and that before I went in the army. And they were going in.
How did you learn that?
Well, the mining and all that. And I went to, sometimes I went to the quarries. And blow the rocks out, you know.
Right.
And
so that was quite useful to the engineers that you did those.
Yeah.
So what was their task then? What were they?
They were there for cleaning the mines up and demolishing anything, you know, out like that. And anything to do with it, I didn't get a chance. I think these old lads done everything. I just fetch and carry. I think carry the explosive.
So when you got off the beach, were you fighting the Germans straight away? Were you firing back at them?
You could, bullets going over the head and shells firing, you know. But our warships are out there. I think the Germans kept their head down because whenever they found out where there's any big shells coming, the warships sent about five or six great big shells back. But as far as I know, there wasn't many Germans there. It was all Ukrainians and things like that. And when they say it gets a bit hot, they packed it up then.
So did you stay near the beach or did you have a mustering point?
We just followed up there, you know, it was more fields than anything like that, you know. There's hardly any buildings. But I did go to one farm. This four of us went up to get some water. And this French woman said, "You know, get no water, you pay for the water before you have the water." So there was a French resistance who went and told him what she said, and he came up and kicked the backside. "You get all the water you want." She wanted to sell it.
Did you have much contact with the French population?
Yeah, I don't know, they just seemed to be offhanded. They were, you know, all this kissing and cuddling. And what got up my nose about when they cut the hair off some of them for fraternising with the Germans, you know. And we didn't like that. Mm. You know what I mean? The Germans were there long enough for me to be friendly. And according to what we heard, the Germans were pretty friendly. The German soldiers were friendly with the French, you know. I mean, if you're living together, yeah, can't help it. But some of the nasty women condemned some of the women, you know, must be jealousy.
Yes. So, you moved away from the beach a bit, did you?
And yeah.
What tasks were you given to do? What was the 505 having to get on
when
you were mine clearing?
Mine clearing, and then went in there, you know, that we'd done anything. We went with the infantry, anything, because we had the rifles with us and just buckled in.
Yeah. So what was the first job you did? Was it mine clearing on the beach?
We went put a Bailey bridges over.
Oh right, where was that? Do you know?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Near Sword Beach, was it?
Yeah. You put over the canals, anything like that, and do anything to keep going. And I can't remember now.
So I suppose it was one thing after another.
Yeah, everybody mucked in. You haven't got time to say, "Oh, that's not my job." They just grabbed you do this.
Mm-hmm. So, did you do any infantry action?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where was that, do you know?
That, we were on the way to Caen. Uh-huh. And we had a bit of a shuffle there, you know. You had to get in the ditch and all that, and you were firing. We don't know where you were firing, but they just pointed towards some trees and kept up the fire in there, and then the tank went over there and they let rip, you know, but a lot of dead bodies in there, but nobody got near them, you know, because they couldn't get out the back end and the front end, and it was just trapped in.
So were you marching along the road or on foot? So you went towards Crom, didn't you?
Yeah. But I had a ride on the back of the tank, you see, and all I could hear over the radio, Sergeant so-and-so is having a brew up. So-and-so is having a brew up. And I said to this tanker man, there's four or five is on the back, I said, in about time we had a brew up. Everybody's having a couple of these, a daft fool have just been hit and they're on fire. That's what they used to say, oh, brew up. But the funniest one, the signalman was there, you know, and it's been in North Country. They said to this fella from Jarrah, there's another Jarrah fellow over on another section. Talk to him and talk to him in your language. And them people from Jarrah outside Newcastle were real broad Tynesiders. I couldn't understand them. And they were talking to each other, giving each other, you know, information and taking messages. Then a third voice after a time come in, and he spoke real Geordie, and they said, and who are you? He says, I'm Hans something, something, you know, German. He says, I've been on the bloody Tyne for 3 years. He says, I know what you're talking about. You're the German, listen to him.
Oh, right. Where was that?
That was on the way to Calm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he actually overheard
that? Yeah, he was... But see,
so he was quite friendly to them.
Well, he was fighting against us, like, but he could understand what they were saying.
I could hear them. Yeah.
But you see, before the war, all these Germans come over, and they were, well, as far as I know, Newcastle. They got jobs down there, and where the railway greenfield engine shed is, was a high bank looking down the Tyne. Well, they got jobs in the engines and cleaning them and all that for less money and all that. And they were mapping out all the time out and all the ships, timing all the lot. And they knew more about England than what we did. I don't know, if it hadn't been for the Americans, we wouldn't have won the war. We had nothing.
So, after you landed, you were straight away into the swing of going forward. There was a big delay getting into
Colne,
wasn't there?
Yeah, the Canadians got a real bash in there, you know. They went up with them silly tanks and Sherman, and the Germans just shut the whole lot up, you know, it was murder. And then they sent the RAF, they said, oh, there's two or three thousand aeroplanes coming over. And they had to put the triangles out pointing towards where the Germans was on this hill. Well, they come over, all these airplanes and all the lads was out there, waving them all there. Half the bombs went on there, half come on us, and they killed, 180 of our troops, you know, because our troops went mad. They were shooting at our airplanes.
Were you there then?
Yeah, I was far out, and the triangle was pointing to them, you know, where the Germans were. But how they dropped the bombs on us, I don't know.
So we took
Corner
eventually, didn't we?
Yeah.
So do you remember any other particular incidents, you know, as you went?
I don't know the name of the villages. I saw, I can't even see them when I see them on the map.
Yeah. But do you remember particular incidents? Did you do any clearing of villages?
You went through there, you know, and there was no Germans there. They all went out, but there was a lot of Ukrainians and things like that. They give themselves up, you know. Because they said they were forced to go in the German army, you know, we never knew. But the funny thing about a lot of them, when we caught them, we noticed they had no ammunition left. So they just fired every bullet they had, see. But they said they were forced into it. But the Germans made them stop behind, you see. But they fired every round of ammunition they had.
So they were just treated as any other prisoner then? So, did you go near Hill 112?
Something like that. There's all different hills. 110 or something like that. I can't remember. Something like that. Mm. Yeah. all different hills. It was no, you
so
know.
So you did a lot of infantry work, did you? Do you remember it? I mean, were you getting into sort of little trenches or foxholes or something?
Well, you were behind hedges and all that, you know, because the funny thing about the French, all that, seemed to put banks up around the fields, you know, and it wasn't too bad then. But we were marching along the canal at in Holland, and Eindhoven, is it?
Eindhoven, yeah.
And we're getting near there, and we're marching along there, and old young soldiers and these girls was at the windows waving to us and all that, you know, and doing all sorts of things. And this lad was waving to them back, and he stepped over into the canal. It was about 10 foot drop. We all looking at him, he started screaming at him, get your pack off, do this, you know. So we all thought, well, we're going to get him out there. So we, somebody said, take the slings off your rifle and put them together. That's how we pulled him back up, and he had to walk 5 miles soaking wet, no equipment. You know, it was, but they helped to put the bridges across and all that, you know, different places.
So these were mostly Bailey bridges, weren't they?
Anything like that, you know, and then we come to as far as Nijmegen. There's nothing there, you know. Went all the way through that bridge and see there was no mines and all that. But I never could blow that bridge. It was the most solid bridge I ever come across.
Really?
Yeah, you know, they couldn't have blown that. They couldn't have, they might have done a bit of damage, but it was really, really strong bridge.
So did you have to wait for us to clear the bridge before you could go and check for mines?
No, we went and had a look, underneath. I was underneath having a look, and the old lad was up on the top, but all the young lads was underneath. We found some explosive, like, and pulled it out and dropped it in the river.
But not very much, though.
No, not a great lot.
How were you managing? I mean, you were living rough, really, weren't you?
Yeah.
Living on rations and whatever you could find. Did you manage to scavenge much out of the country?
Well, in Holland, I had nothing. I mean, in France and Belgium, they had food. In Holland, we went to these houses that are warm and left fire. They had these potbelly stoves and things like that. Well, I don't know what they put a few sticks in there, and everybody had a warm, and these British people were very kind, and they had a family where we were freezing, and we broke ammunition boxes up and shoved them in for them, and they were over the chuffed, you know, having some firewood and all that. We soon got them some wood, and they had no food, and they were eating daffodil bulbs or cutting them and getting the poison part out and eating them. Well, we were giving them food, which we wasn't allowed to do that, because. But I was on guard one night, and being a young lad, I didn't know nothing about it. Somebody, the old chap, said to me, he says, "God, look at that beef dripping. God, look." I said, "What is beef dripping?" I didn't know. I never cooked in my life. He says, "You know," he says, "but people are back in England to do the, give the teeth for that." And he says, "That's for these poor Dutchmen, they go bloody mad." I said, "Would they?" So I went and filled a big jam, which was cleaned out. The cooks must have used it for something. Jam tin up.
Where was this dripping? Was this in the kitchen?
Yeah, in the field kitchen. Balkan Swore, the little village was. I was just out of Eindhoven before we got there. So I knocked at his door early in the morning. I was bang, bang. I said to this fellow coming, I said, "You want this?" Oh, he kissed me. Oh, he cuddled me. So I went back and I got another tin, you see, and I went and knocked at another door. "You want this?" And they threw their arms around me, they're crying their eyes out. Of course, next morning we were on parade, and this sergeant major, he said, "Oh, he's a mess, evil looking thing, like Boris Karloff." He's screaming and shouting, "We had beef dipping in there, we're going to have Yorkshire pudding today, it's all gone, it's all gone. I want to know who was on duty last night." And of course, what could I do? This six of us, so I stepped forward and all that. "Do you know anything about..." I said, "I was in the cookhouse, sir, the others was outside." "Where was that beef dripping?" I said, "Well, actually, sir, that dog, I was all running around." I said, "I heard a noise, but I didn't go in the kitchen, the field kitchen, you know. I thought it was a dog, so I didn't go in there, but I said, it must have been somebody in there stole it. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get shot. He come up, he screamed and shouted at me. What upset me more than anything, his false teeth flew out and hit me on the nose. And everybody said, oh good God, we expected him to pull his revolver out and shoot you there and then. But we were that short of water, even in England we were short of water. And we were out there and they put water in the potatoes and this tank coming, you know, all having better shape. Next morning was that short of water. Somebody went into the potatoes and got the water out there, heated up on the fire and shot a shave. Of course the spuds went black. They were screaming and shouting about that. But they were, in England we had no bread. And this was at Folkestone, and they said, oh, we got bread, because we had these hard biscuits. We got bread. And of course, a truck come along the seafront, and a wave come over and soaked all the bread. So we had no bread again. There were no bread or water in England. That's how bad we are, you know, in some of these camps.
So how did you manage with this living rough and everything? I mean, it sounds as though you managed quite well.
We managed quite well because we were all mucking in together. And I mean, different fellas to what we got today. I mean, we had fellas who was on training ships for being bad boys who got out of bed 4 o'clock in the morning, scrubbed the decks and all that. And there was a full punishment. I had to stand in the corner for 8 hours, do attention, had a drink of water and that's all. And then you had people who comes out of orphans, rough and bad. Now you had real men. You know, you'll never get them again. They were real tough men. And they come up hard way and they knew how to sew and do everything, you know, and they showed us how to darn and everything. But you'll never get a man like that again.
Did you manage to sort of get any old bits of, like, eggs and things as you went along?
No, we had dried eggs, you see, and then, but the funniest part is we all rested once in Holland, they all lying around and feeling sorry for ourselves. And this officer said, oh, I don't know what this bloody thing's coming towards us. And he put his glasses up behind. No, I can't understand it. There's a truck coming towards us, a van. Along comes, it turned out to be a church canteen. And these 2 days got made all cups of tea and all that, and you know, it was off the moon because we were having a rest. But in England, when we were coming off leave, anything like that, we called it on the station, and all we had was jam jars to drink up on the station, no cups. And I always remember a sailor coming up, hey, hold on, soldier, he says, don't get tea, you have my jam jar, go and get yourself a cup of tea. That's how bad we are in England.
So, we went up through France and then
to Holland. Belgium, Holland.
Yeah. Where were you on Operation Market Garden, Arnhem?
I think I was in France somewhere.
Right, okay, yeah. So then you came up into Belgium.
Yeah. Belgium are like the French, not sociable, you know, but the Baptist people are just like us, they were lovely, you know.
Dutch people were quite different. But you were telling me, I mean, you were in Holland in the really cold weather.
Yeah.
The winter.
But the Gestapo girls was at the camp. They were locked in like a cage. And they were shouting to us, Tommy, come over here, Tommy. You know, the lovely, beautiful girls. Some of the lads went over and they come back. They said they want some fags. And they said, not only that, they wanted something else. They said, this one who was guarding them said, they want to get pregnant so they'll be sent home. And the lad said, bugger them, like Gestapo girls in that, you know. Left them there. They had to sleep in the open, just tents and that. They had nothing there, you know. I don't know what happened to them.
So you were sleeping out in all this cold weather when you were telling me about getting into the haystacks.
But
that must have been tough. That must have been tough.
We ended up in the barn once, and we all lived in there, and we were all beetles and all that, climbing all over you. And we woke up, because we were dead beat, we woke up and we looked, and it was the biggest horse you ever saw. And all the lads looked up at this horse, and were out there and barn like a shot. He must have been 9 foot tall or more.
Right. Bill Hale's End of Reel 2.